Hello and welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, the star of the show, the former WWE and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the man behind the 83 Weeks of Dominance, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing fine, JP. How are you, my friend?
Doing good. Doing good. Cannot complain. What do you think about the Triple H regime so far in WWE?
They came out of the shoot looking real good. And I noticed one thing. They used the word wrestling on one of the interviews. Did you see that?
Yes. And he said, I'm a wrestler and I want to wrestle in a wrestling ring. Yeah.
Yeah. And I heard this and I don't know what it means. That, and I may be, there's rumors that Hunter wants to change it back to WWF. Did you hear that?
I didn't hear that, but I don't know. I didn't hear that, but I don't know if they could do that legally. I don't know if they would be able to do that because the World Wildlife Fund.
You're breaking up on me.
Oh, because of the World Wildlife. Because of the World Wildlife Fund, I don't know if they're able to do that legally, but I hadn't heard that rumor.
Yeah, that, I don't think they can, but that's why I asked. I heard.
Would be a lot of new marketing material if you change the name, like they had to do 20 years ago when they got the F out, but I don't know about doing that now. It would be kind of pointless, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why. Unless they want to drop the entertainment part from it and go back to wrestling.
What do you think about Triple H bringing all his guys back? Killer Cross, Dakota Kai, Io Shirai, Dexter Lumis. What do you think about him bringing his talent from NXT back?
I think that's the status quo, that every booker does that. They bring their guys in because they're comfortable with them. You know, he was there. There, all these people, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, were in NXT, right? When he was running.
Yep.
So he's been with them from the very beginning, and he's a loyal guy. So.
Who was your crew? Your guys?
Well, I always had the Samoans because they draw and they're legitimately. Very good. Bill Alfonso as a referee. Paul Heyman. And I always thought Sting was like one of the greatest finds of all time. So that was about in Rick, in the Rock and Roll Express, the guys that I knew that had drawn money.
Surprised you didn't say the Nasty Boys. I know you love the Nasty Boys, but I guess those are more Hogan's guys.
Yeah, I love the Nasty Boys, but they were Hogan's guys, yeah.
So when a booker does that, is it just for comfortability, or is he see something else, like these guys will do anything for him, they're going to be completely loyal to him? Is it also that as well?
It's that, but the main thing is he knows they can draw money. You know what I mean? It's like in baseball, we know, or football. Brady calls people, right? Because he knows they can win games for him. They go to with Brady, right? In baseball, if a manager's had an exceptional team, when the guy becomes a free agent, more than not, he ends up with that manager again.
Yeah, so it's just like any other sport. You're comfortable with your guys. They can do business. You know they can succeed with you. Did you think with Killer Cross, like he should never been released to begin with? Because, him and Scarlett seemed like they got it all.
Absolutely. And I think, remember when they brought him up and then kind of, I guess they released her at first and then brought him back up when he looked like he had a racer head? You know, the helmet they gave him, right?
Yep.
I think that was some kind of punishment, a bizarre form of punishment. I mean, when that kid came up, what an entrance they had, you know? I mean, you if you're sitting on a couch and they came on, you sat straight up. His work was performed. She was very good. It was a great contrast. I don't know why they let that guy go. I mean, whoever's idea was that to let him go and give him that gimmick and bring him back up should never be around the wrestling company.
Hey, guys that are 6'4", 6'5", 275 do not grow on trees. You know what I mean? Like, those guys are kind of rare.
And besides that, can work his ass off. I mean, come on. It's just, like I said, do you know what I mean? I was shooting when I said, the guy that came up with that idea to release him and give him the gimmick and bring him back up to poke fun at him should never be allowed to be around the wrestling company unless he buys a ticket.
It is crazy. And she's gorgeous, too. So it's like, why did they put her with him to begin with? It's like, it's such a good package together.
Right. It might have been, too, a slap in the hands to the guy that came up with that idea. Meaning, Triple H.
Why, though?
Could that possibly be?
Yeah, but why do you think?
Why? When you're in that surroundings, there's animosity that appears for the strangest reasons. And sometimes it isn't directed. They don't want it directed at the guy they're having the problems with, so they'll find somebody to hurt them. Like when Six X-Pac got fired. Right, that wasn't to fire X-Pac, it was to get back at Nash and Hall. So maybe this was that too for Hunter from some other reason. It was ridiculous, but he's going to make them all look like fools. Because I can picture him and Roman having incredible matches. And it doesn't matter for them to heel or babyface who's what. Because I think the people pay to see that match because it'll have a slam bang match, hard hitting, psychology be great, and it's two big guys. I think it was not going to take him long to get right into the mix.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Arn Anderson once told me that with Goldberg, before, like, really the streak started, he had him job and really lose to Chad Fortune. Nobody saw it as part of, like, a set and a night taping. Nobody saw it was really before the streak started, before he debuted on Nitro. But he said, oh, they were talking and they were like, oh, let's see how he handles a loss, or let's see how he is. That ever really thought about, like, even maybe with Killer Cross, like, oh, he's going to lose to Jeff Hardy. Let's see how he reacts. Is that a real thing, or is that kind of just old school and passe?
I think it's a real thing, but I think if you want to really test somebody, why would you do it? Have a guy do a job when you've pumped him up that he's going to be the next big thing, and then you send him out and beat him or even make him look like an enhancement guy when you've been telling him he's going to be the next thing. To me, it's by the time you get a guy ready to go out and you're going to push him, you should know whether he's going to bitch about doing a job or not. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't think you need to beat a guy to see where he's going to stand. If you do, then you've made the wrong decision with the guy in the first place.
So if it's a guy you're confident in, you shouldn't have to worry about stuff like that. But what's your philosophy? Like, the guy's confident, but I mean, you're confident in the guy, but it's like, even for Goldberg, were you almost like, I don't know, like, how a loss is going to affect him, but I don't know how a loss might affect his character too. Does that play into it?
Yeah, because I can understand why Aaron did it on a Saturday night, but that's kind of a mentality where from the older days, you know what I mean? To me, this is just to me. If you're going to make a guy, do you have him go 0-for-4 in his first appearance with the team? You know what I mean? Or do you have him hit a home run at the end of the game to win the game? I think, if, you know, you got one impression to make a first impression. Why not start it out on the right foot? And like I said, you've built this guy up somehow. You've invested money into him. You're going to shoot yourself in the foot, and you're not. You're doing it because you're not sure how he's going to feel about doing a job. That should have been settled way before he got into that position. And I think it's a bit of a holdover for the old days.
It's weird, like, to think, like, were they trying to humble the guy? Was it a rib? Was it, you know, were they punishing Triple H? That, like, with Cross, it's always, like, that weird thing that nobody kind of understands it. Even he himself, I don't know if understood what the hell was going on.
He might not have understood because he was young in the business, but Hunter knew what was going on. Hunter knew what was going on.
I'm glad he was able to kind of like rectify and bring it back, because Triple H said in an interview recently that that's one thing that really bothered him, like about Cross, kind of like the way he was treated. And like, he was undefeated in NXT pretty much. I mean, I think he had one loss, and like, that was it. He was dominant. And when, by the time he lost on WWE TV, he was undefeated at that point. So, I mean, yeah, he said he kind of had to rectify it.
Well, he's done a good job so far. So let's, you know, wish Cross the best of luck. I certainly enjoy watching him.
The ratings are pretty good. About 2 million for Raw this week, and but the week before was like 2.3 million, or I think 2 million. And then I think 2 weeks ago was, I think, 2.3 million, something like that. But, I mean, they've been doing good ratings. Are you expecting this to keep up, or you think that people are just interested in Triple H now and it'll die down?
We're going to see when football season starts. That's going to be the test. And I think it will hold up pretty well. I think it will hold up pretty well. I can see how Cross and the other guys are going to be a game changer, like Damian Priest. He gets a lot of TV time, but you don't hear much about him, do you?
No.
Why is that, David?
I don't think he was booked well under, well, when Vince was booking, I don't think he booked him well. He kind of just made him like a mid-card guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Feels like a lot of those guys, like 50-50 booking. Damian Priest will win one week, he'll lose the next. Finn Balor, same thing, win and lose, and it just loses all the momentum. They just can't keep these guys with any sort of heat.
What did you say the ratings were, 2-1 this week?
I think it was a 2.0, I think, or a 1.99, but it was basically 2 million.
What did AEW do?
975 or 950, something like that. It didn't reach a million.
But that was good, huh? But has the separation gotten bigger over the last few months?
Yes. With Triple H in charge, yeah.
What do you think caused that? Is it just Triple H being in charge?
Honestly, the Vince controversy kind of started it, and people were interested because they were wondering what the hell was going on with Vince. And remember, he showed up like months ago, but he showed up on TV. That got a huge rating because people thought he was going to say something. He didn't say anything except right. for the catchphrase. But that kind of – the controversy creates cash link. That kind of got people interested. And then Vince being canned – well, not canned. I mean, he retired or whatever. That – had more interest. And then with Triple H starting, everybody was saying, oh, it's going to be better, it's going to be better. So it's kind of a combination of a few things, I think.
Do you think some people actually thought that the thing with Vince was a work?
Yes, I think so. Because I think a bunch of people thought that. I don't know why, but they did. They thought he was like a working and he's going to turn it into a TV storyline.
I do too. Because I had a lot of people question me whether that was real or not. And I thought, you think the federal government's going to go along with this angle? You know, it was crazy, I thought. But
yeah, definitely not.
It kind of gave them a real bump, you know what I mean? Got people back to watch it. And then the other thing is they've got that Sunday night program now, right? Where they, what is it, the biographies of superstars?
Yep, on A&E.
Yeah. So, you know, they've maybe opened up an audience for people that would not normally watch wrestling. Someone watching A&E that's of, you know, bit of an egghead, and the program comes on, they watch it, and they get involved in wrestling. They said, oh, I haven't watched wrestling in years. Let's watch it next week. So I think that a lot of things have turned out well for them that could have been complete disaster.
Did you see the A&E biography on the Total Package Lex Luger?
No, I didn't, but I heard all about it. I heard it was incredible. What was your take?
Very good. I was surprised because when it's not a WWE guy or, you know, perceived WWE guy, it seems like they kind of tear the guy down, or they try to, I don't know, they try to be negative or put their spin on it and change things up. But this was very good, very honest. They even had footage of him when he was on the Packers at practice. I don't know how the hell A&E gets some of this footage. Amazing. Like him at practice, and he's talking about how he was lazy when he played for the Packers. And the coach is like, you're being lazy, Lawrence. You're being lazy. So like, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe they have that footage. And he's talking about how he was lazy in practice, and they actually show it.
Wow. It's pretty amazing, huh?
Yeah. Man, what a specimen, too. Like, he could have been a pretty damn good lineman for the Packers, but he said he was too lazy. He just didn't give a shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew assistant coach when he was at University of Miami and said he had all the potential in the world, but just didn't play up to. He was paid for expectation for a long time.
Yeah, like whatever his potential should have been, because his metrics were like, oh, look how fast he is for being how big, and look how strong he is. You know, and everything. And then it's just was like, yeah, this guy doesn't give a shit. Like, he doesn't play hard. He doesn't even, like, try, really. And the coaches were getting on him about it. So that just goes to show you could have all the great metrics in the world, but if your heart's not into it, you're not going to be good.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
You should check that out, though. It's probably on demand, but very good, the one on Luger. They just did one on D-Generation X, too.
But I did see that one.
Okay, I felt like there was a little bit of spin there. Like, oh, DX invaded Nitro, and then Nitro was never the same again. Like, that was, like, it was because of, no offense, it's because of Steve Austin, not because of DX. I thought, like, yeah. Sometimes, like, some of the stuff that they say and do is, like, I don't know, a little rose-colored glasses. Like, yeah, DX was good, but, I mean, behind Austin, behind The Rock, behind Undertaker, behind Foley, then maybe you put DX.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, and I thought about the same thing that you did. You could spin anything. Like, they were the ones that were invading. No, it was Austin and Vince. They were, you know, Abbott and Costello. They were Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. They were the best working heel babyface combination of all times.
I was cracking up because they're like, oh, we started doing this and the ratings started going up. I'm like, wait a second. Are they taking credit for the ratings? It was clearly Austin. Like every metric pointed to Austin. Even if you look it up, I think it was like minute to minute. Austin was like number one. I think Sable was like number two for a while. Like if you look at the ratings, it was obviously Austin McMahon. And then you could say DX maybe fifth or sixth or something. But I just was laughing. I was like, man, they're kind of giving themselves, patting themselves on the back, giving themselves a lot of credit for what Steve Austin built.
Well, let me tell you about DX, the guy that's, they all stand out to me. But that Billy Gunn is a strong, strong human being. And there isn't 10 guys that can work as good as him today in the business. And he has hands like catcher's mitts. This guy is a great athlete. You know, bull rider, breaking horses, power lifter, competitive power lifter. He can do anything. He can dunk a basketball. I mean, the guy is an incredible athlete.
When they did the invasion, DX did the invasion with the Jeep or the tank, if you will, did you ever say, like, we should open this damn door, let him in, and be great TV, or not your call?
Not my call, but I don't think anybody thought about doing that. This is just my opinion. Where would you have gone? Were they, you send your guys out, what's going to happen? A standoff?
Yeah, you're not going to really beat them up. First of all,
what is going to happen?
Right, most of them are friends with Hall and Nash, so you're not going to beat these guys up because, if, you know, they're buddies. Actually, they're probably buddies with Luger and a bunch of other guys too. But it's like, yeah, it's weird. Like, would they just stand there? Would they talk?
They're all friends.
Maybe promos back and forth, maybe. But are you going to give them a live mic?
And the other thing is, maybe the North Tower said, whatever you do, don't open those doors. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
You don't know the ramification of lawsuits could happen. You know what I mean? It was probably a great idea. You know, it would probably been a huge, huge number. Everybody clipped over. But I also would think that Vince would have thought, well, they have Ming and Barbarian over in the head of the dressing room.
Right. You know? Yeah, they'd kill those guys. Maybe outside of Billy Gunn, but they'd kill the rest of the guys, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess this is one of those big what-ifs. And I know Bischoff was on the documentary saying, oh, I wish I would have known, or I wish I would have changed, wish I would have let him in, but then what?
Yeah, then what? What would have happened? I don't think anybody would have got into business for themselves, and I don't think anybody would be working with them. You know what I mean? Everybody, don't cross this line, and they've been pointing fingers at each other. That's what I think. I could be wrong, but you know, you're friends for years. So what? You got working for a different company,
right?
Yeah.
It's just an interesting. Some of those documentaries are great, and the biographies, but some of the spin on them are funny to kind of look at and realize, like, that's not true. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not even possible.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the topic at hand. The reason we're here, WCW Nitro 100, which was held at the Palace at Auburn Hills. And of course, Auburn Hills, Michigan. This was on 8/4/1997. The attendance in the building, 17,616, which was a sellout. The TV rating, 4.4. So, obviously, I mean, we're looking at over 4 million viewers for this one. Schiavone, Heenan, Zbyszko were all out there for the call. Interesting, though, question for you. So, it's called Nitro 100, the 100th episode. It's actually, technically speaking, episode 99. Is there a reason why you guys jumped and just made it episode 100? Is it because you just wanted to make it bigger?
I don't know the answer, but probably.
I was curious, like how they made the leap. It's like, really, it's 99, but let's just call it 100. You know what I mean? Like, where do they get that from? I guess just because it just sounds more grand and it's sold out and it's a huge show.
Yeah, because they knew they had a sellout, 17,000 people. You know, back in the city that Hogan conquered, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
This is also the first 3-hour Nitro. Why 3 hours?
The North Tower wanted it. The North Tower wanted it. And I'm going to tell you what I think it was for. Do you know that when we were doing these ratings against Vince, right? we weren't getting the West Coast ratings because we started at 5 o'clock on the West Coast. So it wasn't put into us. It was time at the time was what time you came on. For some reason, we weren't getting the ratings. I think it was to flood the West Coast.
Is that also why you guys did replays too? Was that really more for the West Coast? Because you guys have a replay right after.
Right, right. That's my thought on it. And I think that was had nothing to do, and I could be wrong, I don't think it had anything to do with anybody else's call but the North Tower.
So basically a directive from them, like, now you guys are going 3 hours.
Right.
Bischoff always mentions, which is smart and true, that the production really doesn't cost anything more because you're already in the building, you already have the setup, 2 versus 3 hours. So technically speaking, it's not really costing more on the production end, but you might be making more for that extra hour of revenue and ads.
I think he's absolutely right. I mean, you're not going to pay the guy any more, right? You're there for, he's not going to come out and wrestle 3 times. And I think he's absolutely right. What would the extra expense be? Just production and having the guys, I don't know how some of them are paid, you know what I mean?
Right.
And because a lot of them, you know, still today, I would imagine, that they pick up side production calls, right?
Yes. Yep. Freelance stuff, yep.
Yeah.
What do you think about just 3 hours in general? Do you like 3 hours? You don't like 3 hours as far as for Nitro. Is that too much? Too long?
Oh, yeah. You remember when the first Nitros, were they an hour, right?
Yes.
Do you know how fast they went by? I think an hour and a half would have been perfect. When you got to 3 hours, I mean, think about this. The last 20 years, entertainment movies have gone down, the average movie has gone down 22 minutes. You know, the average movie back in that time was about 2 hours and 22 minutes. Now they're like an hour and 57 minutes. So, I mean, you just can't keep the people's attention anymore. I mean, how often do you see you go into a restaurant or a pub and they're watching a football game or a baseball game and they're looking at that, but they're also looking at the phone at the same time?
Yeah.
You get a real problem to keep people involved and dragging something out for 3 hours. The other thing is people say, well, maybe I'll watch something else right now and come back to this. I think it was a beginning of weakening of the product.
So you're not a fan of 3 hour nitros. They're just too damn long.
Yeah, it's just too much.
You think the same could be said, obviously, today for Monday Night Raw? Like, Raw is too damn long. 3 hours is crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to remember, okay, you go for that extra hour. It's taking you probably, for the average person, you're getting home over 2 hours later than you would for just a 2 hour Raw. First of all, it's an hour that you're in the building, right? It's going to take you an extra hour to be in the building. It's going to take you how many minutes to get out of the building? 20 minutes? Go to the car? You're into a half hour. Now you got to get through the traffic. So you're talking about an hour and a half, 2 hours at the minimum. You're bringing kids. It's night school the next day. I think it's self-defeating.
It's almost like a pay-per-view every single week. You know, a three-hour pay-per-view every week.
Yep.
it's just one of those things where the network may like it and the ad revenue, whatever, may like it, but the fans get tired of it. The wrestlers got to get tired of it. Creative kind of can't keep up with it. Just seems like 3 hours is way too long. And Nitro is the real reason why Raw is 3 hours. I mean, they started it, and Raw, you know, eventually many years later, but they copied it.
And I was thinking about something the other day, and I looked it up, and I was right. You know, when Vince going against Crockett, you know, at the end and buying it from Crockett?
Yep.
Maybe this whole thing started from Jim Crockett Sr. when he went into New York City in Sunnyside Gardens against Vince. He backed Argentina Rocca to run opposition against Vince, and he wanted Buddy Rogers to do the same thing in Washington. Because I think they had this, and you got to remember, they were both NWA members at the time. Well, I think there was a discrepancy of where their line was. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Because back then they both had permits for Baltimore. So I don't know, but I thought it was funny that they always blamed Vince for the start of that war, but his father had done it years before.
Very true. Yeah. Now, as far as this show and this being a 3 hour Nitro, obviously it's all predicated the main event, Hulk Hogan versus Lex Luger for the WCW, AKA spray painted NWO World Heavyweight title. Obviously, you know, this is a huge show with a huge moment, and it's kind of like threaded throughout the show, but Hogan will come out to start the show, and he'll have his, you know, typical promo. He's the Babe Ruth of wrestling. He's the man, you know, getting booed. Is that kind of just you want to start the show? Obviously, you got 3 hours, so you got more time, but you want to start the show and make sure that it's mentioned throughout what the big main event is going to be. Catch people, hook them to start.
Yeah, you want to build up the match as big as you can, so they don't get distracted between the opening and the time the match goes on 2 hours and 40 minutes later. You know what I mean?
Yep. Do you think that's a problem in today's wrestling, that they're not doing that enough, where you're like really building up the main event, hammering it home, and promoting it throughout the show?
I also think one of the things they don't do is, do you remember, did you used to go to Madison Square Garden, JP?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Okay. Do you remember back in the day when, hypothetically, that night it's Bruno against Kowalski and Jace Rombo or Pedro against Smasher Sloan? They would announce, ladies and gentlemen, next weekend, regardless of the next Garden show, regardless of the outcome of these matches tonight, Bruno Sammartino will be facing Bull Ramos and Pedro Morales will be facing Dr. Big Bill Miller. Right away, they'd plug the two matches. You'd be excited about it because you know you're going to see two great matches. But they also left you hanging. Well, maybe the championship is going to change tonight. You know what I mean? Do you know what I'm saying by that?
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yep. I mean, they did it. You know, and the other thing they did, which we can't do anymore, was, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you heard this 1,000 times. Ladies and gentlemen, coming back to the next Garden show after a long absence, Chief Big Heart. Ladies and gentlemen, coming back to the Garden's next show after an extended absence of 3 years, Hans Mortier. You know what I mean? They just made it a place that you had to go. You had to see. I mean, you were there. What do you think?
I used to love that, especially with Howard Finkel when he was announcing it. He'd be like, and the return in 2 months of the big boss man or something. Just the way he would say it, and everybody, right. You know, they'd give the pop and you know, and be like, and the main event will be Hulk Hogan versus Kamala or whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whatever his voice, but he would get everybody excited about it.
Yeah.
Those were the days. Those were definitely the days. Definitely missing those days for sure. There's no doubt about that. So for this Nitro. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say for this Nitro, they also.
Go ahead.
Oh, they're promoting Sting for this as well. So they're teasing some big stuff for this Nitro.
Good.
What was your thought on MSG? You were going to say something else about Madison Square Garden. You love working there?
The other thing, not that just that, but the other thing is there's no coming back soon after a long absence. Can be done occasionally, but now, you know what I mean? A guy is with the company till he isn't, right?
Yep. Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. So we start off with the first match, Mortis versus Kurt Hennig is going to be here. Mr. Perfect wins in about 4 minutes with the Perfect Plex, as Mortis did have James Vandenberg with him, but Perfect goes over in about 4 minutes. A lot of these matches I noticed are short. Is that because, like, you know, for TV time, obviously entrances count, not as far as match time, but I mean, they count as far as the run sheet, right? So like in and out, bell to bell, not necessarily entrance. You know what I mean? It's not bell to bell what you guys are figuring out. It's entrance to exit.
Right. Right.
So I'm reading it as 4 minutes, but Perfect's entrance was probably a minute and a half. Mortis probably had a minute entrance. I mean, so it's obviously longer, but we just look at the match times. We're seeing, wow, there's a lot of short matches on Nitro.
Right. But you gave them 2.5 minutes. I'd say it's 3.5 minutes before there's contact.
Also, do you like the short matches so people aren't flicking over to Monday Night Raw?
Well, I yes and no, but I want, you know, my perennial bitch was, I want to see how long they go without touching. God, it's wrestling, you know what I mean? I want somebody to touch. I don't want them after 3.5 minutes walking around, he'll get outside, kill time. That's great if you're at a house show, but you're not at a house show. You're doing a TV show, and you got to get it done.
True. Yeah. It's one of those things where, I mean, you guys are going to try to cram in a lot of matches on this show for sure. Like, I think it's almost 12 matches are going to be on Nitro in 3 hours, but a lot of them are very short.
Right. And again, it's exposing guys. He's trying to get everybody that you need to get on TV, but you really, in my thought processes, you're giving quantity rather than quality. You're getting a lot of matches on, but maybe because you're trying to do what you just said, JP. You're trying to keep them from turning the channel.
So the next matchup, Dean Malenko and Jeff Jarrett with the beautiful Deborah McMichael defeated Chavo Guerrero Jr. and Hector Guerrero in about 5 minutes. Interesting thing here is Jeff is the U.S. champ, but he just beat Dean for it, but he's also teasing he's a horseman. So you go, and Deborah's out there because she loves Jeff even more than her husband. So, I mean, you guys are having a lot of interesting storyline kind of wrapped around Jeff Jarrett, the U.S. title, the horseman, Malenko, Deborah. I mean, you guys got a lot of stuff kind of crammed in here.
Yeah, and, you know, Chavo and Hector, too. I mean, their name alone, you know, the Guerreros are a historic name in the wrestling business.
Did you want to make this storyline with Jeff more of a main event? Or was it always supposed to be kind of like an upper mid-card thing? It wasn't going to, because the NWO is the main event, it wasn't going to seep through. Like, he wasn't going to break that glass ceiling. Or did you want him to?
Well, you know, when you get a guy like Jeff, he's definitely is a top player. At that time, the NWO was the hot guys, but the Horsemen were right behind them. So put them with them and let's see what happens. You know what I mean?
To me, like, this is a good storyline, but I always felt like it's, it wasn't going to crack the NWO. Like, it's going to be the mid-card, and maybe Flair may have some animosity here because it's like almost like the Horsemen are kind of downgraded or delegated because of Hogan and the NWO.
Could you repeat that, JP? Your crack broke up on me.
So, like, the Horsemen are kind of mid-card here, but because Hogan, the NWO, it kind of pushes Flair down, even though, because he's a part of this storyline as well.
I don't think that the fans saw them being pushed down. This was once in a lifetime, the NWO. There's never been anything like it since, has there?
No, hell no.
Okay, so there was a just unique experience about it, but it was, to me, it was still the Horsemen are on top, but what they're seeing with the NWO is a completely different story that they've never seen before. So I don't think any lesser than the other guys, they were still drew big money, still drew big ratings. It was just that they were in a unique situation. Be involved in. I mean, I think about it. There was people packed to see the NWO. They believed the storyline. These guys produced. You couldn't have asked for a more perfect storm. I don't think you could do it today because everybody knows everything about the back. You know what I mean? On the internet, they know how long the contracts are for.
Yep.
It was. Those guys did an amazing, amazing job.
So next up, Raven is interviewed by Mean Gene Okerlund. Stevie Richards, shockingly, makes his appearance here and says he's got a WCW contract. Raven spits on Stevie and slaps him and pushes him away. But what do you think here? Like, you're taking on another ECW guy. Obviously, you got Raven. You got him earlier in the summer here. It was a nice surprise. But you got Stevie Richards. Were you making like a – I know obviously Raven's flock, but were you kind of making an ECW stable, or did you want to take more ECW guys? What's up with the
– Of course, because they were a unique company. They had their own followers who were rabid followers. Why wouldn't you want to incorporate them in your company? Because you know they're going to tune in to watch their boys.
Yeah. So I'm always fascinated by the Nitro party. Like, they always have plugs. Did you guys have, like, legitimate, like, all those tapes of people sending in Nitro parties? Or were some of those, not fake, but, like, were some of them, like, produced by WCW? Like, were all the Nitro party stuff real? Because, you know, they send in the tapes and all the guys. Oh, so okay.
And they actually went to places, and they were filmed live and put, you know, satellite into the show.
I don't know why. I was always just curious because they always look like, you know, like they're real, like it's legit. But I'm like, oh, I wonder if they ham it up a little bit.
Well, they were college kids, mostly at dorms, right, and frats. They're going to ham it up when they're on TV, but, you know, and when they're half a quad of vodka into themselves, you know. It was a very unique situation, and I thought it was done very well.
I don't know why. I always think about those Nitro parties, but that's great because it just shows you the level of interest in Nitro. All these colleges and all these people were just obsessed with Nitro and getting together and having parties and watching it.
Do you remember, and the other thing was, do you remember when the guys used to dress up and come to the matches and sport coats and ties, being the Horsemen?
Yep.
Crazy.
Love those days. So the next matchup, the Giant comes out and he defeats Joey Maggs, Lenny Lane, and Scott D'Amore, Impact Zone Scott D'Amore, in 1 minute, 30 seconds in a 3-on-1 handicap match. Post-match, Macho Man is out with Elizabeth. Macho says he wants none of the Giant. The Giant kind of vehemently disagrees and Macho Man runs off. But was this just a little squash, quick little squash here? Let's make the Giant look great as kind of, you know, building him back up.
Yeah, you got to realize he was very young in the business at the time. And you got to get him over without putting me in a situation where it might have been over his head just for that moment. Yeah.
What's up with the no music? He came out this time to no music. What's up with that?
Probably mistake in the production.
That's happened before, though, with him, where he's had no music.
Yeah, we would have mistakes. And the other thing is, I think that it was a problem, and I'm just surmising this. I think it was a problem that we didn't get his music cleared. You know, we used to have to get the music cleared so we didn't have to pay ridiculous rates. And I think every week they thought they were going to get it cleared, and they didn't.
It does stand out that he comes out and there's no music. Like, it's kind of like, whoa, he's like the only guy that has no music that comes out. But it is weird because everybody gets music. I mean, it's 1997 here. I mean, I just thought that was a weird thing.
Yeah, but I sort of remember something like that where every week we thought we were going to get it cleared. I think this went on for like a month in a row.
So then we get a Lex Luger video package again. Hinting towards the main event, building the main event, talking about Hogan Luger, making it seem very important, almost teasing a title change, almost like teasing something's got to happen here. Do you like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Go to boxing. How many times have they said, you know, an upset could happen? You got to plug it that the guy's got a chance.
Yes.
More than a better chance to make it interesting. Like the biggest work of all times. And I was shocked that people bought in this, that Conor McGregor was going to beat Floyd. What, were they crazy? I mean, Stallone, he's going to knock him out in four rounds. Conor will knock him out in four rounds. He never had an amateur boxing match. Here's argumentally the greatest boxer pound for pound in the history of the business. He's going to lose to a guy that never had a boxing match. I mean, and they drew what was in their pay-per-view, the second largest of all times?
Yep. Up there. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, so obviously somebody hyped it, right? Right. Isn't that why we go to see what's going to happen?
Yeah. Yeah, you want to be shocked and surprised sometimes. You want to believe,
Yeah.
It's that old great X-Files line, I want to believe.
Yeah.
So then we have Public Enemy versus High Voltage. Public Enemy gets the victory in 5 minutes. Nothing crazy or nothing right home about. Did you like High Voltage at all? I know you love Public Enemy, but did you like High Voltage at all? Kenny Chaos and Robbie Rage? Yeah.
Yes, I did. They were very nice guys. Very nice guys. Would do anything you asked. They were great. And they were fairly talented, too. They were just stuck in a bad position at the time. That was the strongest talent arrangement maybe of all times. Right up there.
And the next matchup, Alex Wright defeated Scotty Riggs. And retained his Cruiserweight Championship. The match goes about 4 minutes. Alex Wright, Cruiserweight division. I mean, I guess technically he is a Cruiserweight, but you know, you could kind of say he's almost a little big for it. Scotty Riggs, too, is almost like a little too big for the Cruiserweight division. But do you like Alex in with the Cruiserweights? Because, you know, he's a pretty big dude.
Yeah, he's a pretty big dude, but he's not thick. And
no.
He fits better with Scotty Riggs, Malenko, Guerrero, Satin, The Flock, then Nash, Hall, Kurt, Randy, Hogan, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And he's a talented guy, and we got to protect him because we're going to Germany pretty often. And he's the catalyst that we're riding the future on in Europe, or Germany, Austria, Switzerland, you know, so, and England, because his father was English.
Yep. Very true. So the next match up, actually, before we get to the next match, Lex Luger has an interview backstage with Mean Gene. He says it's a defining moment, not only for himself, but for WWE and for the NWO. He's looking to take advantage of this opportunity that landed in his lap. So again, pumping up the main event, again, teasing something there. He's saying defining moment. So you get a little bit of Easter eggs here that there's a, not a glimmer of chance, but there's a big, big chance that Luger's going to win the title tonight.
Yeah. It's just to keep them strung along to protect the audience from switching the channel.
And I like, just, I mean, that's,
them.
Three different times you guys are talking about the main event, which is great. Hogan interview, Luger video package, Luger interview. So really good as far as that. Then we get Chris Benoit, who defeats NWO member 6 via DQ in 4 minutes. Jeff Jarrett ends up hitting Benoit, causing the DQ. Then Malenko comes out, then Mongo comes out, and it's all bedlam for the Four Horsemen here. Is this something with, you know, you guys, were you loving this teasing tension with the Horsemen? Like, Benoit and Jarrett can't get along. Malenko, Mongo, nobody's liking Jeff Jarrett except for Flair.
Yeah, we wanted to keep that infighting and keep the tension, and it also put a spotlight on the Horsemen. We wanted to keep them as hot as we could because the NWO.
So then we have the next match up. Booker T with Stevie Ray defeated Vincent of the NWO in about 49 seconds here. A bit of a squash match for Booker T over Vincent. What's the thought process here? Just because it's Vincent, NWO, he's not going to, you know, it doesn't mean anything?
Yeah, it doesn't hurt Vincent. And we're trying to get Booker really over, you know what I mean? Which, he was a fantastic worker. I'm sure he still is to this day. He just had the it factor. So we're just trying to get him over.
Then we have a TDP interview with Mean Gene. And then we have Wrath with James Vandenberg defeating Barbarian in about 3 minutes. It seemed like you guys were kind of stopping starting on Wrath a lot. And I guess it's okay that Barbarian took the loss here. But do you think you could have done more with Wrath?
He came in at a very difficult time. Everything was half-ass shoot, right? And then we're doing the... What was the takeoff of what movie was he?
Oh, with the Adam...
It was Mortal Kombat.
Oh, well, I was going to say Adam Bomb, but yeah, that was a WWF game. But yeah, it was like a Mortal Kombat thing, yeah.
Yeah. Do I think we could have done more with him?
Yep.
Was that the question?
Yes.
I thought he was fabulous. I don't know what the problem was, but there were some inner problems back there because he had some unknown heat, and I don't know what it was about. But he was fabulous. And I just saw him recently. Back in the day, man, he was unbelievable looking and could work for a big guy. It was very athletic.
Man, it's crazy to think, like, you know, with him, the potential's there. Maybe not the promo ability, but potential's there. I mean, he just, look at him. I mean, he's awesome shape. He just looks like $1 million. But obviously, there was potential that was kind of dropped there. No doubt about it.
Without question, that was... I look back, I was watching he had this tape running. I was at an autograph signing. He had this tape running of some of his highlights. And man, he looked terrific. And that finish that he did, picked the guy up, swung him upside down like a plate. You know, we really blew that angle with him. Really blew it bad. And I really liked him. Very nice guy.
So Mean Gene is out next with an interview with the Steiner brothers and Ted DiBiase. DiBiase was gone for a few months, but he's back. And he says he's going to lead the Steiner brothers back to the tag team titles. Out come the Outsiders, tag champs. Hall then chastises the Steiner brothers' lack of brains. And Nash reminds Ted DiBiase that NWO's for life. And since you're not in the NWO anymore, you're a dead man walking. Interesting stuff. Really teasing, obviously, the big match for Road Wild 97, the Outsiders versus the Steiner brothers for the tag titles.
Yeah, it was done very well.
Great line there by Nash, too. Great line by Nash. I mean, yeah. If you're not NWO for life, then obviously you're a dead man walking. I mean, that was pretty good there from Nash. Then we get the Nitro Girls. Love the Nitro Girls. And then 1-800-COLLECT with the road report from Lee Marshall, who used to always say that, you know, he was weasel hunting or something very funny. And obviously Lee Marshall had that awesome voice, and he is was Tony the Tiger.
Right. What a voice, huh?
Unbelievable, yep.
What a voice. Very nice guy, too.
Did you very love nice the guy. Nitro Girls? I guess that was Eric's idea, but did you like the idea of the Nitro Girls?
Everybody loved them. I mean, it was a great idea. It was a great idea. I don't know whose idea it actually was, but whoever it was, kudos to them.
Then we get Conan defeating Psychosis with Sonny Ono in about 2 minutes. Quick match here. Rey Mysterio comes out and is teasing and really promoting the match that he has with Conan at Road Wild. So really just kind of setting up all the matches here for the big pay-per-view. And it's just kind of, you know, quick match, but really to set up Conan and Rey coming up. Then we have Ernest Miller and Glacier defeating Damian and Silver King in 3 minutes and 30 seconds here. Is this just a time filler, or do you have plans for Ernest Miller and Glacier? What do you think about that?
They're favorites of the office, and we had to get them on.
So then we have DDP Diamond Dallas Page defeating Ric Flair in about 10 minutes, but he defeats him by DQ. Man, it's almost like this is a loaded show, just as far as like, wow, you got Hogan and Luger in the main event, then you got DDP and Flair in kind of the build up or the lead up.
Yep. Try to keep them to the last moment.
So the Horsemen caused the DQ, and obviously DDP would kind of have them scattered by the end after the DQ finish. He would use a double clothesline and kind of scatter them from the ring. But it seemed like a lot of big matches in WCW, just like, for instance, DDP Flair here, have a DQ finish. Do you think you might have went to the DQ finish too often in some of these big matches?
Absolutely. But now you have the problem of creative control. When you give it to one guy, and then you have the NWO, as great as they were to work with, could change things too. It starts to come down all the way down the line.
True. Do you think creative control, well, not really necessarily creative control, but do you think the DQ finish is just overused? Because I know they did it on Raw recently and that people were liking it because it was different because they hadn't really done it as much. But back here, back then, seemed like it was almost overused. Do you think it was?
Yeah, I think for years it was overused. I mean, you were a wrestling fan. You know when a DQ is going to come up, right?
Oh, yeah. It seemed like almost every main event.
Yeah, when Bruno was wrestling someone, the first time in, you figured if he's going to have three shows, you know Bruno's going to get counted out on the first one, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Very true. So yep. Then the next matchup, the Los Villanos, Villano 4 and Villano 5 defeated Hector Garza and Liz Mark Jr. in about 5 minutes. Decent match, but nothing really to write home about here. But the big thing is coming up next. It's Mean Gene with J.J. Dillon. And you guys were doing this and kind of running this out there a bunch. And I just thought some of this is so funny because it's so like, come on, you know what Sting wants. So J.J. Dillon would constantly say, what does Sting want? What do you want? He would call out Sting from the rafters. He says, I got an offer for you. So Sting emerges from the rafters. Yeah, J.J. Dillon says he can't undo the past, but he can change the future. Here's the offer here. Sting, I have your contract. You versus Kurt Hennig. I mean, it's a good match. It's just nice, but obviously everyone knows they're chanting Hogan. They know he wants Hogan. The whole thing is Sting Hogan. So, of course, he rips up the contract. What do you think about that? Because it almost makes JJ look, you know, quite foolish. Like, everybody knows he wants Hogan, except JJ.
Yeah, and I think JJ was the guy to be able to be the fall guy for that, to take that. Of course, you know, they're trying to string this out and get as much heat before that match with Sting and Hogan. That's what that was all designed for. 25 years later, it shows a little weak, you know, but yep. Back in the day, it did its part.
It's just so funny. I remember just cracking up. Me and my buddies, like, is JJ nuts? Like, everybody knows he wants Hogan. He doesn't want a warm up match. He wants Hogan. Come on, JJ. Yeah. It's so funny.
Yeah.
So then Michael Buffer is here. So then you know it's big deal, right? I mean, then you know it's big news. He's here to let's get ready to rumble. He's ready for the main event.
Yeah. Michael Buffer is Michael Buffer.
The WCW World Heavyweight Championship is on the line. Lex Luger. In a great match, the crowd is nuts for it. I mean, they are just loving this. You know, despite some NWO cheating, despite, you know, Macho Man, everybody else, like all these guys' best efforts, Lex Luger puts Hogan in the rack and Hogan taps in about 12 minutes. Lex Luger is the new champion. The crowd is nuts. It's one of those awesome feel-good moments. I mean, it's just like, I don't even know, goosebumps, I guess you could say. It's one of those moments where it's just awesome. Schiavone is great on the call. He's going nuts. I mean, it's just, it's an unbelievable moment for Luger to win the WCW title here on Nitro.
Right. Right. It was a great feel-good moment, like you said.
He earned that title shot back at Spring Stampede, so that's why he is deserving of a title shot. But why did Luger win the title?
To make Nitro a must-see program. You know, we had a lot of finishes that weren't palatable to the fans. This was one of the things you make up to the fans. And it was a good thing for Hogan, too, because he was going to need a baby face to work with in case anything ever happened to Sting physically. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely. So
yes. It's better to have too many guys to work with and not enough.
I love it, too, because obviously they're fighting at the pay-per-view. They're fighting at Road Wild, too, so there's going to be a rematch. Now it makes Nitro seem huge. Nitro 100 seem bigger. But then you have more intrigue into the pay-per-view, right? I mean, that's what it's all about.
Right. Right.
Why did Hogan want to lose? Because obviously that's the big question. Not why did Luger win. Almost the bigger question is, why did Hogan want to lose here?
What I said, to have an out in case anything happened to Sting.
But why Luger? Why did he think, like, you know, some guys he won't job to or doesn't want to. Why would he agree to Luger?
Luger looked like $1 million, and he obviously thought he could draw money with him.
Do you like Luger winning here and then Hogan winning at the pay-per-view, which is going to happen? Do you like that 5 days later? Because it keeps the NWO strong, and it keeps Hogan Sting, big picture, strong.
Yeah, but we could have waited a month, but sometimes you can get sidetracked, so probably was the best thing to do 5 days later.
Now, we've talked about this before, too. And I was just talking to my friend about this. We were laughing. I could see Hogan losing here because it's a huge moment on Nitro and getting more appeal to the pay-per-view because he got pay-per-view points, right? He got.
Right.
So obviously, right. I think that, and to be honest, I think it's pretty obvious, the amount of people buying the pay-per-view went up because he was challenging for the title now. There was like more intrigue.
Absolutely.
Is he the smartest guy ever or what? I mean, that's pretty genius. Like, I'll lose here, but I'm going to make more money on the pay-per-view on Saturday.
Absolutely, he's the smartest guy. I mean, he had a great business sense, and he was the master politician of all times.
So he creates this awesome moment for Luger. Luger gets the win. Funny, Vince couldn't book this. You did, though. Luger as a top babyface, and the crowd is nuts. I mean, Vince wishes he could have done this with Luger. He could not. He failed miserably. But you were able to do it, and the celebration where the wrestlers come out in the ring, I think, added to it. I feel like that was awesome, too. Very cool that everybody kind of celebrated the moment for Sting. I mean, for Lex Luger winning the title.
I do, too. It was good for Lex, too. He deserved it. He worked hard. We talked about him earlier about not working hard. He worked very hard to get where he was.
This was a new Luger here. But I just always laugh because Vince couldn't get this guy over, but you could. I mean, you figured it out.
Yeah. It's pretty hard to make a mistake with a guy that looks like Luger.
That is true. I was always thinking, like, how did Vince kind of screw that up? I don't know if it was his attitude or not, but you hit it out of the park with him. He was one of the most over guys easily in WCW.
Yeah. He worked at it. He was good. I had a great relationship with Lex.
So overall for the show, would you give it a thumbs up?
Definitely. Definitely. Got us up and going again.
Yep, and obviously this is a part of the 83 Weeks of Dominance. You guys easily won the night, and obviously Luger versus Hogan would help the Road Wild pay-per-view with just about 250,000 buys on a Saturday in the summer, so pretty damn good there as well. So let's head towards the plugs. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. And of course, Pro Wrestling Tees. Go to prowrestlingtees.com. Visit the Kevin Sullivan store. You can follow Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. Kevin, what else you got going on?
I'm in New York this weekend for signings for Bull James. Also, the following week, I'm in the West Virginia for Chris Hughes for signings. So, and, the book, Wrestling Old School, Ring Squared. You can get that on Amazon. So that's about it, and we'll be back here next week.
Yes, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPT Empire to become a patron, and also check out the website tmptempire.com and buy a shirt at prowrestlingtees.com. Two-man power trip, where the power lies, brother.